I think the impeded would be looking to use the most, just as Dr. Scaramano suggested, is leaving natural buffer areas downhill of the developed areas, the lightly developed areas. But those buffer areas only work if the runoff going into them is entering an unchannelized flow. Now, there's two ways you can have that. One, you can have the buffer immediately adjacent to the developed area, and if the developed area is fairly small and there's nothing in the topography within the developed area that would concentrate the runoff, then you can just let it go off and make sure that it doesn't get concentrated. Another possible option is if it does get concentrated, you can redistribute it with a level of spreader. Well, level of spreaders are not perfect.
What are they called?
A level of spreader is a basically you run the runoff behind a berm that's along a level that's across the top of the buffer area, and the runoff spills over the top of that berm evenly across the buffer area. But they need maintenance. They need to be inspected on a regular basis to ensure that there hasn't been a failure and the runoff isn't going channeling right down the middle of the buffer. Also, you need to be making sure that nobody's cut the buffer. I suspect that views are going to be a desirable thing in a lot of the residential development associated with this. And if you want to put buffers immediately downhill on a residential lot or a multi-housing condo unit, that may restrict the view. And there will be a temptation to remove some of those trees and to impact that buffer.
Okay.
So that's fine. The more sophisticated things that might be used in a hotel area or with golf courses, places where runoff are dealing with larger disturbances, particularly the underdrain soil filters that we talked about, they need regular inspection to make sure that they're working where they're supposed to. And the challenge for everybody is this is scattered all over the landscape. And, if this entire development, not just the resort area, but everything else happens, there might be thousands of buffers out there that are being relied on to meet these standards. And so the challenge for LIRC and for Plum Creek, I think, is to come up with a strategy that would ensure that they do get inspected on a regular basis and they do get maintained.
On this point of the organized areas, does DET in a similar development where those buffers have been required as part of a site permit or whatever, do you regularly inspect those kinds of situations, or is it an article of faith?
We would love to. We don't. We do not have the fix.
Have you ever conducted any studies or research on the effectiveness of these kinds of techniques in the organized areas? And, what are the success rates long term?
In terms of maintaining buffers over the long term, yes and no. We know that there are buffer violations that have. We haven't done any specific analysis of the investigative handle on how frequently that happens. I think it's rare that the buffer gets eliminated, but it often gets encroached on. We come across failures of other PMPs in our work, even without doing a specific doing anything to serve. So it's something that does happen unless you're on top of it. And yes, we rarely admit we are on top of it.
Mr. Dennis, could you just speak a little bit more loudly so sorry we're working here today?
Mr. Dennis was the coordinator. My sixth conclusion or understanding, and this you heard me ask other witnesses, is that the ability to apply new standards, not freeze the standards, as BMPs or other approaches evolve. And for that first hand, again, I use the term BM Fetter, you stated several times in your testimony it's very important. And that you may want to comment and just quickly explain to the commission your view of the evolution of the technology that you deal with over the last years.
Well, the national view, it followed the, as Dr. Scaramata described it quite well, basically, you use the concentrated runoff and then try to treat it. Now, you try to avoid concentrating it and you spread it out initially. That's called the low-impact development strategy. Actually, we've been pushing that through the phosphorus methodology since 1980. We've been, buffers are, have been our BMP of preference. So, and I think it's unlikely that we're going to come up with something that's as good as a buffer. Either you can keep it there and you can keep it enough well distributed to have it. But buffers don't fit into some places. And where you can use buffers, I think it's that's where those kinds of BMPs that you can use as alternatives to buffers are evolving all the time.
I see.
And right now our underdrain soil filter specs change every 2 or 3 months because we've learned more about how to do them better.
Every 2 or 3 months?
Over the last year that's been the case.
Last, my sense of the last conclusion you've reached, and then I want to ask you, put you on the spot as to whether you feel like I fairly captured the essence of this, is that not only should LURC ensure that its standards are not frozen, and you commented on that twice, but that some LURC standards in place now, that are in place now, actually need to be improved, and that you don't believe are sufficient or state-of-the-art. And in your August testimony on page 3, you gave the example of road runoff and export of phosphorus. Did I capture that correctly?
I believe that, yes, the LURC standards for roads, the general standards for roads, do a good job in erosion control and trying to avoid erosion problems. They don't recognize or deal with the fact that even if you don't have eroding ditches or even if your road is crowned and the runoff is leaving it the way it's supposed to, the runoff off that road is probably higher in phosphorus concentration quite a bit than what would have been coming out of the woods if that was what was there. And what your standards don't do is suggest that the runoff should be kicked off into the woods on a regular basis into buffers, things like that, which actually would provide treatment for the runoff as opposed to preventing extra sediment being into it by erosion control.
So that might be an example of where DEP may be commenting on a specific subdivision in the roads within it, where you are going to be recommending techniques that go beyond existing standards.
Well, we would try it in the lake watershed. We would be doing that in the phosphorus application, making sure that the roads were going through the BMP provide enough treatment to that runoff so that they can meet their allocation. And the same thing would apply in the Moosehead watershed where we basically don't have a good model to fit that lake, so we can't come up with an allocation, so we're going to recommend the general standards of the stormwater rules, but the same thing would apply. Basically, roads are probably in a subdivision setting. Roads are probably the biggest discharger of phosphorus.
Last question, then I'm all done. Just to ask the question that Mr. Rickard asked Plum Creek. Assuming that spray irrigation may be one technique used in some of these zones for in the resort zones where there is particularly the aggregation of wastewater as opposed to using individual leach fields. Do you have an opinion, same question that Mr. Rickard asked, as to whether, going back to my per se standard, per se, such a method of waste disposal could not be located in Class A streams, or is your testimony the same as what we heard from Plum Creek's expert, that it depends and there's a possibility that it could be done?
It depends. I would emphasize even more, though, is they're difficult to cite, soils and slopes considerations. And there's certainly no guarantee that there's a place out there where you could, in or out of the platform marshes, where you could cite a spray irrigation area. And that's something Plum Creek hasn't looked at, and I think they should have.
But you're not prepared to say now that it wouldn't be possible to do it.
Right. I think that again, sort of, the risk thing would be much lower risk than not running a class of watershed. And but it might be able to be done. Now, can I ask you a question?
Well, let me keep you. Who knows? That's up to the chair. But just to finish up on this, going back to your kind of be forewarned. One of your conclusions, that to the extent that Plum Creek decides to rely on a waste disposal system, a spray irrigation waste disposal system, an above ground system like that, they should understand that DEP has some very significant concerns if such a system were to be located in a class, in any place, but particularly in a Class A watershed.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, you can ask.
I have a question about this locating this spray irrigation area, and may I ask it? Under alert zone,
we may not be able to answer.
Okay, under alert zone, in these resort areas, there's a resort envelope that's for the things they've said they want to put in those resort envelopes. It doesn't say anything about spray irrigation. If they wanted to go outside the resort envelope with a spray irrigation area, is there anything limiting from doing that? Because they try to squeeze everything they want to do in these resort envelopes, it will be much harder to find a place to also use spray irrigation. But if they can go outside the envelope for spray irrigation, it will be much more useful.
You mean in the conservation areas?
In whatever it is adjacent.
Yeah, that's what's adjacent.
That would be the conservation areas. I think that would be dictated by not only the permitted uses within the regulations, but also the easement terms.
As I recall the easement, we had quite a discussion about this, allows the spreading of septic waste in one of the easements. I don't know if it's the balance easement or the legacy easement, but that doesn't necessarily answer the question, but it was a possibility.
So your testimony, Mr. Dennis, is that to the extent that any lands around the development zone are in, and development zones are in the conservation easement lands, that you would encourage the commission to look at the appropriateness of and the legal possibility of being able to have a spray irrigation system in areas that are outside of the Class A stream watershed.
Yes, I think it would give Plum Creek more options to avoid risk within the resort zone and outside.
Thank you, Ron. Ed, do you have a question?
Yeah, I do. First of all, Mr. Dennis, Dr. Kudimash, I want to thank you for the other staff, DEP, for your participation in this regulatory process. I mean, the information provided is invaluable. I want to thank you for that. Jeff, earlier you mentioned it, if I understood you correctly, you said that that in the state of Maine, there are similar scale developments that have been undertaken in Class A watersheds that don't meet Class A standards. And I was wondering if the Moose Mountain Ski Resort, I think it's changed, which is not operating, but if either in its non-operating mode or in its operating mode, is it one of those developments that is it in a Class A watershed and is it not meeting Class A standards?
I didn't really say what you said.
Okay.
I said that there are stream watersheds that have similar levels of development.
Okay.
Not necessarily one development, but
okay.
It might, I mean, there are plenty of stream watersheds in the state that have the kind of density of development that's proposed for this resort area. They might be in suburban waterfront,
right?
But of the ones that we've looked at that have, you know, development in this range of density, they don't meet Class A standards. But it's also development that didn't try to meet Class A
standards. Right. But do you have any information with regard to the water quality impacts of the Moose Mountain ski area? Recognize, I need to preface this by saying, obviously the Moose Mountain ski area is not part of this concept plan. It stands on its own. But nonetheless, what I'm trying to explore here is, particularly with regard to the proposed development envelope that Plum Creek has proposed for the Moose Mountain area, given the fact that the ski area is adjacent to it, and given the concerns about phosphorus loading and stormwater runoff in the Moose Mountain resort area, is there any relationship? Should Moose Mountain ski area begin to operate again, would there be a cumulative impact, particularly on Burnham Pond and that other Class A streams, that we need to be aware of? Or would the operation of that ski area be somehow restricted, or future expansion plans be somehow limited? Are the two linked, the water quality issues, between the two resorts?
I suspect that if Moose Mountain wanted to expand, the ski area wanted to expand, then yeah, there could be an increase in impact. We haven't looked at any streams downstream of that. We do know that, you know, Mountain View Pond had some major problems from failures back decades ago of their spray irrigation system. But have we monitored any streams draining that area? I don't know of any particular problems with that. We couldn't say one way or the other whether the streams are any Class A or not that area at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Jeff, were the you were involved with this about a year ago when we did Saddleback, and we approved, I think, around 900 resort accommodations as we're describing them here, in a much smaller watershed and a much more confined area in the, on much steeper slopes. I think you can envision what my mind is going through thinking about this and then thinking about what we're dealing with here. Now, was that a Class A watershed? I guess, based on what I'm hearing today, I'm not sure why we voted to approve that. So we approved a 900 resort units plus what's already there, and up, you know, on some very steep slope on the Saddleback Lake, which is the water supply of the town range. Right? What's, you know, can you tell me what the difference might be between that particular location and the ones that we're looking at here?
Well, the streams, as I recall, the streams when they get into Saddleback Lake are third order streams, and at that point would be better able to handle the streams that in these envelopes are the first or second order streams. Do you understand what I mean by a stream order?
Well, we don't need to. I don't think you need to try to educate me tonight. But I got a rough idea.
They're smaller streams.
Smaller streams. Okay. Right.
And the I'm not saying that there hasn't been impact on those streams, but it's already at Saddleback Mountain. I No, they never have. I still have a bunch of it.
But they are Class A, right?
Yes.
Is that what we're saying?
The way the development is spread out in Saddleback, it's across a number of stream watersheds. And if that happens in Plum Creek, and they do the kind of mitigation measures that Saddleback will have to do to meet the phosphorus allocation, then there's which will be very significant.
I remember you pointing that out.
Then I think the Class A streams will be in pretty good shape from the expanded development. Now, the fact that there's all the ski slopes going into those Class A streams already, and there's been a lot of disruption, channelization flow as a result of that. We haven't looked at those streams in a long time, and so I'm not sure if they meet Class A. We probably should be looking at them before anything happens in Saddleback. We're not sure if they still meet Class A now. So I don't think that the increment of development would have made this that much worse than whatever has already been done. You bring up a good point. We should be looking at them. The 900 units for Saddleback, my testimony suggested that you could fit all of that into the phosphorus allocation, and you might only be able to fit a third of it in, and depending on how effectively they could mitigate that export. So, anyway, and we were going to go along until we used up the phosphorus allocation.
I'm remembering that now. All right, well, we don't need to pursue that. I guess just to want to understand what the differences were.